The Tilehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to I guess we can call it a special Tilehurst End podcast. It's certainly an unplanned Reading podcast, as those of you who might have listened to our chat with myself, Mark Mayo and Westy during Monday, where we discussed how Jose Gomez, we hoped, would at least get until the end of the month as a chance to prove himself in what has admittedly been a very difficult period of form. Alas, here we are just a couple of days later, and I'm chatting basically on the verge of Gomez being sacked. It's not been official yet, but we won't publish this until it has been official. So to do that with me is Ollie Allen. Ollie, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Mark. Becoming an all too familiar feeling, I think. I remember sitting here with Tom Crocker when Paul Clement got sacked 10 months ago, and then sitting with you, I think, when Jaap Stam got sacked only 19 months ago. So to be doing it for the third time in that period, not a great feeling, but here we are.
Yeah, well, as I said on the Monday podcast, it was the never-ending story, and it was at least kind of the club to wait a couple of days to not completely knock that podcast out of being out of date for a couple of days. But yeah, it's an interesting scenario. Basically, what has happened sort of to date is that Jose Gomez has been reportedly summoned for talks with the club. That's kind of understood to have been Jose, usually in international breaks, goes back to Portugal to see his family and whatnot, and it was, I believe, basically taken place over Skype or some sort of conference call, that he was discussing his future, and it sounds like the discussions have moved to him being sacked, basically. And the idea, I suppose, being really, Ollie, that these owners are very intent on getting promotion. The idea, as Jose said himself when we signed George Puskas and Lucas Schau, the idea was that this is a team, despite as fans what we see it as not being ready for promotion, they hoped that it was going to push forward and whatnot. We are currently in the relegation zone after 8 games. We're not the only team that have sacked our manager by any sense of the word, of Barnsley, Sunderland, just to name a couple in the last couple of days. So what's your immediate reaction to Jose going then, as a sense that the club, obviously, a lot of people are saying, have been impatient? Do you think that that's a good way of putting it?
Yeah, look, I'm very torn. I think you can see why they've done it, and I think that is the owner's reasoning. I think, you know, they've spent a lot of money in the summer, 15 million, really. I think if you're combining the fees of Puskas and Zhao, and, you know, to be honest, 22nd place in the league isn't good enough at this stage. I think you have to admit that. You know, 2 wins from 11 games, no wins in 6, I think. You know, so on the results basis, yeah, look, it clearly isn't good enough. And I think if you look at his tenure as a whole, you know, even though he did fantastically well to keep us up last season, I think still, you know, his record as manager stands at just nine wins, 14 draws and 15 defeats from 38 games, which gives him a win percentage of 23.7%, which I think only Paul Clement has a worse record than that in the modern era. So that sort of tells you, perhaps he's been worse than maybe we think he has. But yeah, on that basis, you know, it's difficult to make an argument for him to stay. But I think at the same time, you know, it's still very, very, very early on in the season. You know, he was given, I think, a very difficult job in some of our owners. You know, he's, you know, come in, you know, last December, you know, been given a group of players, you know, who haven't done, you know, anything really over the last 18 months since the playoff final. You know, have been constantly losing games, have been in this rut, you know, that Stam couldn't get them out of, that Clement couldn't get them out of, and really in a losing mentality, really. And Gomez has been tasked with, you know, trying to solve that in a very short space of time. You know, he was given those 5 loanees in January. You know, only 2 of those, Ajaria and Miazga, have come back. So he was almost back to square one then in the summer. He had a transfer embargo enforced upon him by the owners and couldn't really make signings until the last couple of days of the window. And even then, we don't know, you know, how much influence he really had on those signings. I think, you know, you look at the influence of Kia, for example, you know, how much Gomez himself, you know, wanted those signings, you know, we don't really know. So he's been dealt a bit of a tough hand by the owners, and I think you have to look at his record last season, and you know, yes, you know, we didn't finish, you know, mid-table, you know, we still finished close to relegation zone, but I don't think you can, you know, understate how bad a situation it was when he came in, you know, last December. You know, I know we weren't in the relegation zone at all, but the atmosphere at the club, just the whole feeling of apathy, really, from the fan base. As police sirens go off in the background, potentially going to get, I don't know who, but you can't understate, you know, I think, you know, the attendances were down, you know, fans, you know, were losing that connection with their club. And Gomez turned that around, you know, he brought that connection back. You know, yes, a lot of it was to do with the things he was saying in press conferences and stuff, but he got the fans back on side. There was a lot more of a positive atmosphere around the club. More fans were going to games. You know, football was becoming enjoyable again. That was the impact that he had, you know, more so than results. And obviously the results do matter, but, you know, he turned the club around, I think, last summer. Or last season, sorry, and it's still very early on in this season for him to be judged fully.
Well, yeah, just to explain, I am currently in central London on the way to the gym, which is, as the nature of the HDR podcast that we have to do when people get sacked, is means that as any chance of central London, there's a chance of traffic, which I'm kind of underneath near Waterloo at the moment. So, yeah, sorry if there's some bad interference for those listening. But, yeah, let's take the standpoint for a second before we kind of flip it over and look at how unlucky Jose has been, because, as you mentioned, I don't think we can take for granted the whole atmosphere and the way that he talked a good game. And yes, it's only certain parts of it, but a lot of managers just don't bother. Yap Stam didn't particularly bother, and Steve Clarke and whatnot, you can say the same for managers who come in and actually try and build an identity, and the whole Portugal State Day stuff and everything like that. And, you know, from the times that I've spoken to him and from the times that the fans have spoken to him at the Star Fan Forums, he's always come across as a very sort of amicable, nice, like, obviously, the main thing that he wanted to do was talk about football. And that's you know, you've got to credit that with a manager who could very easily have come in a bit begrudging and in a foreign country. And I think fundamentally he was just chuffed to be in charge of an English football club, which is, you know, nice to see. You can't take that for granted. And then on the pitch, in terms of him being unlucky, it's difficult because in some games, a lot of games rather, we have been very close to results. We were very close to a result against Middlesbrough, against Bristol City on the weekend. You can make the claim. You can maybe even say the Charlton and Blackburn games recently, we were very close. But there have also been games, Ollie, where we haven't been close. And there have been games such as the Fulham game. Obviously, we had a man sent off, but you think about the Swansea game when he'd just taken over, the Leeds game as well, where when the going got tough, he, and he's not alone in this as a Reading manager, wasn't able to come up with a solution to sort of turn it round.
No, yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that Fulham game, you know, may almost have been that decision maker before the Bristol City game. Sorry, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people saying that the owners were at the Maneski for that Fulham game, and obviously not the best performance them to put in front of them. So, yeah, look, I think, you know, we spoke about it when Bam was sacked as well, that Gomez just didn't have a plan B. You know, he didn't really seem to have a plan A at times as well, but, you know, he couldn't decide on, you know, what his best formation was. You know,
well, he kind of locked himself into this 3-5-2 formation during the start of this season, and I must say it worked. It was the classic case of it worked to begin with, then we got found out, and then we had no plan B.
Yeah, and, you know, he tried going to a four at the back. I think it was four at the back against Fulham, I think. So, you know, and obviously, you know, that's our heaviest defeat of the campaign so far. So we obviously thought that, well, clearly that's not working. So we'll go back to a 3-5-2. And to be fair, you know, obviously, you know, you spoke about the Bristol game on the podcast. You know, it was very much a game of two halves. And I think based on that, first half, Ashton Gate, you know, and there was a big case for, you know, for letting him go. But on that second half, you know, as we've seen so many times this season, that you know, they put in a performance. And to be fair, you know, in that game, he perhaps did have a plan B. You know, he moved Liam Moore into midfield, and, you know, that seemed to change the whole dynamic of the game. You know, because it allowed Reading to get up the field more and you know, create more chances. And arguably, you know, we should have scored at least one or two. You know, George Puskas missed a couple of good chances, as he has done the last few games. And, you know, sometimes you have to think, you know, if he puts that ball in the back of the net, or, you know, if he scores, you know, a couple more in other games, you know, are we sitting here now talking about Gomez being sacked? And you have to say probably not, you know, because at the end of the day, he's being sacked based on the results, and Reading would have got results if they'd taken those chances. So, We haven't played terribly. You know, you look at the data. You know, we've spoken about XG a lot, and you know, Reading would be a lot higher up in the table if you know games had panned out as that data suggests it should have done. But as I say, you know, you have to judge managers on results, and you know, sadly, they haven't been good enough.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Puskás, because I do think he's the most important player. As Jose Gomez, you know, whatever you picture, a sort of romantic driving off into the sunset, if he catches a glimpse of George Puskás in his wing mirror, he might just think, that's the man who cost me my job, because the owners obviously have forked out a lot of money and pledged a lot of money to make him work, with Lucas Schau as well. Neither of them, I don't think you can say either of them have worked as signings yet, because they've not scored enough goals. And Puskás has had the chances to score goals, but he hasn't taken them. Zhao, I don't think Gomez really knows what Zhao is best doing.
He doesn't look bothered, Lucas Zhao, to me. You know, warming up the weekend against Bristol City, he didn't look bothered. And when he came on for 10 minutes, he didn't do anything. So, yeah, I'm confused by that signing, to be honest.
Yeah, and I thought at the time that it was a great signing, because you think, oh, we finally need a striker. There's your striker. He's going to be central. We've paid $5 million, whatever. Go. But then we signed a striker for £8 million 3 days later. And I thought, hang on a second, what was the first one for? No one said we needed two, we only needed one. And then, you know, hate to say that I've been proven right in that so far. In terms of where Reading look as a club then with our latest manager sacking, as we say, it's been, I think, three in 20 months now. And Gomez, I would point out, is only on a contract to the end of the season. So he's probably quite a cheap sacking. He probably wasn't on a huge amount of money. I like to think he wasn't as a wage. Obviously, Paul Clement, we gave a 3-year deal and sacked him after 6 months. So we're probably still paying his wages. And Jaap Stam was on a new contract. I think he probably till the end of the summer just been when we sacked him. So
over a year, I think he had left on his contract.
Yeah, so we spent a bit of money on this sort of stuff. But as a club as well, it looks bad when you're kind of hiring and sacking and whatnot. But when it, as fans, do we have too high expectations for keeping managers who are, you know, you've got to stick with to get through a bad spell? Obviously, you can say the Reading way and all that sort of stuff belies on us keeping managers. You can argue that actually the Reading way involved us sacking quite a few managers, the likes of Burns, Bullivan and Brendan Rodgers all bit the dust pretty quickly, and we did well because of that. Or is it just as a general disappointment as a fan that we kind of emotionally invest in a man who I think is probably worth emotionally investing in as a man, maybe not as a coach, but and then we get left disappointed again when we're having to say goodbye and start all over again?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, as I said earlier, you know, the connection that Gomez formed between, you know, himself and the fans was fantastic. You know, I know, you know, some people won't care one jot about that, but you know, as a fan, I think, you know, when you feel so disconnected from your club, you know, when a manager comes in and says all these things, it's, you know, it's great to hear and makes you feel good about your club again. So, as I say, ultimately judge it on results. But, I mean, you know, Steve Coppell needed 3 years to get Reading into the Premier League, and I think Brian McDermott needed 2.5. And McDermott, look, I don't think McDermott won any of his first 5 games. Obviously, you know, Gomez is on a worse run than that, but you know, you've seen examples of, you know, clubs, you know, look at, you know, Bristol City with Lee Johnson. You know, they haven't gone up yet, but they, you know, they're looking on good form. You know, they played well at the weekend. I think now are in the top six, and, you know, they've stuck with him through, you know, some troubled times. So I think I can see it from the owner's point of view, because they clearly do want short-term success. And, you know, they, as I said, they spent a lot of money and, you know, they want results quickly, but you know, they can't expect, you know, Gomez to work miracles. As I say, that they're dealt in quite a tough hand, you know, but if results aren't coming, then they're going to want to change. But at the same time, you know, if they keep on changing managers this quickly, you know, and not giving them time to sort of create their own squad and to create their own way and to give them time, you know, then they're never going to get, you know, results. And I think, you know, what happens now if we bring, you know, someone else in, you know, they don't do as well as expected, perhaps, you know, and until the end of the season, you know, do they make a change then again, you know, and then we're back to square one. So it has to be a case of finding that balance, that the owners, you know, have to sort of find some sort of compromise, that they have to be patient in some aspects. You know, of course, you know, if it's not working terribly, you know, if a club's on a run, you know, such as they were with Stam, you know, 1-18, then obviously that's a, you know, legitimate reason to sack someone, and things clearly aren't going to change. But you know, if a manager is simply, you know, after 11 games as we are, you know, isn't doing so well, you know, give him a couple of weeks at least, I mean, to turn it around. You know, for me, it seems quite a knee-jerk reaction, but as I say, you know, they want success. You know, they're the ones that have put all this money into the club. So, you know, I suppose, you know, can you blame them for their decision?
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I think I would have given Gomez till the end of the month, but we are entering an international break now, and it gives a bit of time for a manager to come in and shake things up. Because I think one of the things that we haven't mentioned so far is the atmosphere within the team and the training ground atmosphere. And I think there's quite a lot of reports that have said that it's just not a good place to be at the moment, and that Gomez is, for whatever reason, or for, you know, whether it's players who aren't playing or the ones who don't understand the tactics or whatnot, he's maybe not, you know, connecting with the players, and he's not been able to sort of keep the dressing room on side. And fundamentally, when that happens, it's very difficult to keep your job.
Yeah, no, I think sadly that probably is, you know, one of the nails in the coffin really for Gomez, I think, because once that dressing room is gone, you know, there's probably not really any way back, to be honest, because the only real way back from that is starting to win games. And, you know, if you haven't got a dressing room, then you can't win games, in a sense. You know, I think, you know, there's unconfirmed reports that, you know, people have been calling him the salesman or whatever, which, you know, you can see why, because of what he says in his interviews and stuff. You know, that's not confirmed or anything. But, yeah, I think that for me is probably the, you know, I'm very much, you know, of the opinion that we should have given Gomez more time, but I think that argument for me is the most convincing one to let him go, is that the dressing room, you know, is, you know, supposedly lost. And I think if you look at, you know, we don't know which players that, you know, he's have become disillusioned with him, but, you know, I think if there are sort of senior figures in the dressing room, you know, losing faith in him, then that will seep down to the younger players. And once it gets to that point, it's almost a point of no return in many ways. So, yeah, that for me is probably the most convincing argument for letting him go, if indeed that is true.
Well, I think I do want to move on and talk about who might be coming into place. But the last point I'd say on this is the Gaffer Cleary and Chris Gunter situation is obviously one that we've debated quite a lot, and it's still ongoing because they're still out the team. I remember saying in the summer that if you're going to, you know, outcast them and say, you know, you've got to get a move out, and they, you know, they do that, then I think that's fine. That's a bit ruthless. It's a bit, you know, you can say, oh, we need to be nicer to players, but fundamentally they're not brilliant players, and if you need to move them on, you move them on. But having failed to move them on, I didn't understand the case for keeping them in the reserves and not bringing them back into the team. And it may be a bit awkward for a couple of days, but I think if you're matter of fact and you're honest about it in any work scenario, you'll understand, and you'll say, okay, get on with your job, and this is how things are. But to the fact that they're still in reserves, and they're from what I've seen in the media, they're quite, you know, honest talkers, they're quite articulate, and they're the sort of players who, you know, maybe other players will listen to and will take the opinion of as something worth listening to. So there is that factor, and ultimately
they've been with the club for a very long time, haven't they? So I think, you know, they've clearly created friendships there, and, you know, they've been stalwarts of the club and have seen lots of changes go through, and, you know, I think they've clearly got a connection with a lot of the players in there.
And if the players who come into a place aren't any good, then as a fellow player, what are you looking at? Saying we've just spent 8 million quid on this striker who can't hit a barn door, and we've told our, you know, our well-respected veteran winger that he has to train with the reserves. You've got to think, like, you know, it's inevitable there's going to be questions.
And then to include them in the first team photo as well, I think it's just a bit confusing for them. You know, you could see in that photo, neither of them were smiling, but, you know, it's just a bit confusing for them, I think, to put them in that photo and then to say, off you go back to the under-23s. So, yeah, I think there were clearly perhaps sort of underlying tensions there, you know, but I suppose we'll never know the full truth of that.
Well, the sort of manager that I remember saying on Monday that I'd like to see come in is a manager with championship experience who perhaps has a bit of a hard nose and perhaps, you know, can sort of bring together a group and motivate them as a collective unit once again. And if you'd have offered me the name of Mark Hughes, I might have well told you that that's the sort of ideal candidate for those characteristics. And that is the man that is being highly touted to come in. What's your opinion on the potential of Mark Hughes coming in, Oi?
Again, very torn. I think immediately, you know, you look at his recent record, you know, sacked from his last three jobs, you know, albeit in the Premier League, QPR, Stoke and Southampton. It's like from all of those clubs, with those clubs all in the relegation zone, you know, so that doesn't scream, you know, excitement to me. But look, he's clearly an experienced candidate. You know, he had a very good career with, you know, Man United and things, and played for Wales quite a lot of times as managed Wales, as managed Man City, you know, towards the start of their sort of, you know, resurgence. But so in that sense, you know, he's certainly, you know, a very experienced candidate, and has spent the majority, if not all, I'm not quite sure, you know, what leagues he's managed in, but if not all of his career in the Premier League, you know. So in that sense, you know, he's probably the perfect candidate. But I think for me, you can't look at his whole career. I think you have to look at, you know, his recent managerial stints, and for me, that they just haven't been good enough. And I think you know, 18.5% win ratio at Southampton in his last job, you know, albeit from only 27 games, but, you know, it's not good enough, really, I don't think. And you look at comments from fans of those clubs, you know, especially Southampton fans and Stoke fans, who he was at most recently, you know, saying that you want to steer clear from Mark Hughes, you know, which, you know, obviously is only, you know, some fans' opinion, but for me, it wouldn't inspire me massively. Is he any worse than Jose Gomez? You know, no, probably not, because he has got that experience. But at the same time, is he really a massive upgrade? And again, I'd probably have to say no. You know, I'm not saying he's a bad manager. As I say, you know, he's clearly got experience and he's clearly well respected, you know, within the game. But in terms of, you know, does he excite me and does he convince me that he's the man to take the club forward? You know, no, probably not. And I think you have to look at the reason why we're being linked with him. You know, and that's because of his connection, you know, to Mark Bowen, who's coming as technical director at the club, and Keir as well, who's, I believe, his agent or advisor. And it just strikes me as, you know, it's the same sort of appointment as Paul Clement was, you know, when he was, you know, best buds with Ron Gourlay. And it's almost, you know, jobs for the boys in a sense. And, you know, that obviously worked out terribly for the football club. And, you know, we can't be making these appointments based on, you know, who's good friends with who in football. You have to be making these appointments based on what is good for the football club. And I'm not sure Mark Hughes is.
Yeah, I must say, that is the other factor, isn't it? Is that this whole, the fact that I think Mark Byrne was a Stoke with him and maybe a couple other jobs as well. I think that, yeah, it's entirely not how you run a football club, is because, oh, I know him, he's a good mate, we can get him in. It's kind of like Steve Clarke as well. I think he just lived locally. And it was just kind of a nice and easy one. He lived in Ascot or something. Said, oh, yeah, get him in. He's a good manager. And, you know, it didn't work out that badly, but it didn't work out that well either. So it's a very difficult one when you have these sort of conflicts of, you know, you could call it conflict of interest if you want to be extreme about it. And with Mark Hughes, I think the other thing that people say is the kind of entertainment factor. Is he going to be an entertaining manager? Is he really going to want to connect with the club? Those things I would be a little bit pessimistic about, but I think entertainment has kind of been, you know, pushed to the side at the moment. You worry about that when you're mid-table or when you're doing well, and it's a bit boring, as we were under Yap Stam. So the entertainment factor is sort of TBC, but yeah, a bit pessimistic about that. And to be fair, I would give him a bit of slack for the previous jobs. He did quite well at Stoke for a few years before they've, you know, capitulated, and no manager has been able to fix them since then. QPR were a complete mess, and obviously he was a complete mess there as well. Southampton have improved, but they've improved under a man who's probably one of the top, you know, Ralf Hasenhüttl is not getting them too far away from the relegation zone, and he's one of the best paid managers in the league. So it's difficult when you have a manager who's not done well at clubs that aren't doing well. The thing is with Reading is that we're not doing well. So if he can't turn around those ships, then maybe he can't turn around this ship. And you know, it's something that we're going to have to keep an eye on, and it might be quite quickly announced, and hopefully we'll know soon. And really, Ollie, I suppose the final question we can talk about is how does this sort of change of expectations for the season? Obviously, Gomez, we never really expected to be in the playoffs or anything like that. We hoped that we were going to be doing a bit better than a relegation battle. I suppose for me, this doesn't really change anything, because a new manager has to take us away from the relegation battle at the very least. And I still don't think he'll get us in the playoffs.
I think one thing that making the change this early does do is that it does perhaps, you know, give, you know, the manager the chance to go as high as he can. You know, I think, you know, traditionally, I know, obviously, Clement was sacked in December, Atkins was sacked in December and Clark was sacked in December. So, you know, it's really only McDermott and Stan from the last sort of 4 or 5 years that haven't been, that haven't left the club at that time. And, you know, switching managers at that stage, you know, almost at the halfway mark, you know, gives them a decent period of time. But, you know, it's not really, you know, that, you know, long enough to make a drastic change. You know, you don't see clubs going from, you know, the position that we're in at the moment to, you know, sort of the top six in half a season. You know, it happens, you know, quite rarely. Obviously, you know, Reading themselves were sort of 12th in December before, you know, going on to win the title. But clubs in the position that we're currently in, you know, sort of Christmas time, don't usually go on and do that. So I think in that sense, that, you know, that's, you know, looking how early we are on the season, you know, only 11 games in, you know, still, you know, three quarters of the season still to go. So in that sense, you know, you can see why they've made a change in that, you know, in at this time, because it gives the new manager time to, you know, hopefully kick on the table. I'd still be happy with a mid-table finish, I think. You know, it's still very, you know, whoever does come in, it's still very early in sort of building this squad, and that there probably will be some teething problems, especially if Mark Hughes comes in, because I don't think the players sort of fit his style of play. You know, so, you know, hopefully we can get, you know, a bit of a new manager bounce, as they say, you know, an old cliche, and, you know, win a few games and sort of move away from the relegation zone and then just sort of, you know, neatly tick along maybe for the rest of the season. You know, I'm not writing the campaign off, but, you know, even with Gomez in charge, you know, I wasn't expecting the playoffs. You know, we made all these signings towards the end of the window and people were getting excited about making the top six and stuff, but I still think it's very, very early days. You know, to be talking about that, and yeah, as I said, I'd be happy with a mid-table finish, and then, you know, hopefully, as long as the owners are happy with that, you know, and you don't, and they don't expect, you know, top six football or whatever, then, you know, they keep the new manager into next season, give him time next season, you know, to hopefully build something, and we go from there.
Well, yes, yeah, so let's hope so, and it's. It's going to be an interesting one to watch, and we've got, I think it's Preston at home is next up, so that's the sort of game that the Reading need to be thinking about, you know, getting a good start under a new manager and hopefully turning things around quickly, because the Jose Gomez era, as has been confirmed now, is over, and we have to go and find someone else to chant about and whatnot. And I suppose if Jose Gomez ever listens to Tarleton podcast, having famously appeared on it, then I suppose it's a case of thanking for him for his work and his effort, and also being someone who actually seemed to care about the club, and that is something that we'll always admire. And we've always got the sort of Ipswich and Wigan wins and those sort of moments to look back on fondly. And it's onwards and hopefully upwards from here. So thank you very much for dropping by, Ollie.
Thank you very much, and I'll extend my thanks to Josie as well. I mean, it's been a strange period, I think, for the club, really. You know, one we'll perhaps look back on in five or 10 years' time is a bit of a weird one, really, when this sort of unknown Portuguese man came in, you know, rejuvenated the fans. You know, we had a Portugal day, and 5 months later he was sacked. So it's been an interesting period, but yeah, hopefully onwards and upwards from here.
Yes, and thank you for everyone for listening as well and persevering with traffic and all sorts of random noises that I can imagine are going on in the background. And we'll be back after the Preston game, I should imagine, unless we sack another manager before then, and review exactly where the club goes from here. So until then, come on your ass.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.